So COVID hits in March, and then kind of everything's like, oh, don't really know what's going to happen now.
Sure.
You know? I don't know how, what's going on, but UFC continued to be the only sport really happening at the time.
Fucking shout out to Uncle Dan for that one. That was special.
Really. And that's where the sport grew more than it ever
has. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to sports gambling and stuff like that. You know what I mean? He's taking advantage of a market where it's like, you know, you got people that love to gamble and there's nothing else to gamble on but fights.
Right, right. Right. I didn't think about that at all. Yeah.
That was huge for the organization.
How many business are you running?
Well, two, basically, and then fighting.
Once fighting, like, starts bringing real money, like, big boy money, you're gonna...
I enjoy cutting hair personally, so...
I remember you told me this. One time you gave me a haircut, you're like, dude, I don't think I'll ever stop doing this.
Yeah, seriously, cutting hair for me is, like, at this point, is more of a, like, kind of an escape from training all the time, you know what I mean?
Really?
It's, like, just a different thing to do, you know?
Makes sense. I mean, compared to fighting another human being in a cage, it's like it's a pretty different spectrum of activity, right?
Like, yeah, yeah. It's relaxing to me. Like, it's just calm. You get to chat with someone. It's not bad.
You get to listen to their life story.
Yeah. Plus, it's satisfying to see like a cut from the beginning to the end. You know?
Right. When did you start fighting? What was the early you start training?
I was 11 or 12 when I first started.
Wow. You and your brother both at the same age, or?
Well, my brother's a year and a couple months younger than me. Like 14 months or something like that, and then but we started at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So when did you start training?
When?
What did you like? What was the first discipline?
Oh, it was more like kickboxing.
Kickboxing?
Gym, yeah.
Okay. Did you like that right off the bat or what?
Yeah, pretty much right away. The individuality of the sport is what drew me to it. So it was like basically no matter how as hard as you work is what you're going to get out of it kind of thing. You know, it wasn't like team sports where
you have to rely on someone.
Rely on other people and a lot of like opportunity, say, than just putting in the work.
Right. Know? Did you play any other sports that you liked?
I played soccer growing up mainly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Me and you both, eh? So, yeah, once that started going, you started enjoying it so much that you thought you could make it a lifestyle? Did you ever think that, like career?
So, originally, my dad got me into it more as a fan, and I was kind of like a diehard MMA fan probably for a year or two or like about a year before I started training. And then when I moved back in with my dad from my aunt's house, I tried out a class, and it was pretty much history from there.
Really?
I quit all other sports and just started focusing on that.
That's
crazy.
What were you watching when you were younger? Were you watching a lot of, like, Japanese Grand Prix stuff or what?
For MMA?
Yeah.
At the beginning, honestly, the first live card I watched live, like, not in person, but, like, live pay-per-view was Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen.
Damn.
So, yeah, it was a crazy fight for me to watch for the first one, but I was still a fan before that, you know, being Canadian, fan of GSP, and then Frankie Edgar was probably my other biggest, like,
inspiration.
Idol at the time.
Did you ever watch the old stuff like Crow Cop and Fedor? And,
yeah. So, like, I remember I bought all these MMA DVDs from Best Buy. It was, like, UFC Greatest 100 Fights, stuff like that, yeah.
That's hype, man. So you fell in love with the sport from, would you say, watching the videos, or was it more from the gym, or was it a combination
My dad just kind of introduced me to the sport, started watching it, and then I was just, like, kind of geeked out and always, like, staying up to date, checking MMA sites every day for new news, etc. You know?
Cool. Did you ever think, like, you know, you could be fighting in an octagon in the same association that you watched?
So from the day I started training, that was my goal. Like pretty much I've always been a competitive person throughout my life. So it was like having this sport, I was like, it was going to be 100% or I just wasn't going to do it, you know?
Well, this is a sport where, like, it kind of has to be that, right?
Yeah. Because
if you're kind of the middle of the road guy, that's where you get really hurt, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I never wanted to be a person where it's like, oh, I fight once and, you know, I'm happy with that. Like, I wanted to make it to the top.
Right. So how does that process work from Windsor, Ontario to UFC? I want to know a little bit about what organizations you fought in here and then how you finally got the shot, the call up.
So originally when I first started, I probably had my first fight a little less than a year after I started training. I started my first actual competition was a jiu-jitsu competition. I pretty much just learned most of my jiu-jitsu stuff off YouTube at the time with my brother. Yeah, and then we'd practice at the gym because the gym at the time that I was training at didn't really teach it as much grappling.
Right.
So,
Is there no other gym, by the way? Sorry to interrupt. Is there no other gym that had jiu-jitsu in Windsor at the time?
At the time, yeah, there was other gyms, yeah. But it just, I was so young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, okay. I wasn't really too, like knowledgeable on where right. to go and stuff like that. But eventually I made that switch down
right,
the road.
Right.
I had my first jiu-jitsu competition, won some divisions, and I did two divisions. I won, I got silver in one and then bronze in another or something like that.
Which weight class was this, you remember?
I was probably only like 140 at the time. I was
That's super technical stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like the lower the weight, the highly technical.
Yeah. It was a different skill level too than what I was, and it was like a kid's division. I think I was probably only like 12 or 13 at the time when I competed.
Right.
And then after that, my first actual fight was a amateur boxing match in Detroit. And
that sounds...
I fought a guy. He was actually in my corner for my first fight.
No way.
And I fought a guy who was pretty experienced. I think he had 5 fights at the time. I didn't have any. It was my first fight. And I ended up winning. So that was a crazy experience for me. It was just a decision.
Just a decision?
Yeah. But it was. And then after that high of actually winning a fight, like a combat,
right.
Jiu-jitsu is a little different, but that high I experienced in that fight was just something. Honestly, I don't know if I experienced that level of
in anything
a satisfaction since then. You know what I mean?
Right.
But still, you get a little glimpse of depending on the, I would say. Like how big the fight you're having sure. is, you know, or how yeah. hard you worked. That's a big factor into it. Cause I think, you know, it was my first experience of like, okay, you put the work in, it's going to pay off type thing. You
right.
know?
But it's different. It's not like you put in the work in soccer, you get on the field, you win or lose, you're going to go home fine.
Yeah.
You're
exactly.
putting yourself in like
at risk,
a
right?
risk, and you're a young kid, you're fighting someone that's older probably. Right.
Yeah. And
experience.
And the win is 100% you know
right.
what I mean? Despite having a team behind you and people helping you train when you're in there, it's all 100% you.
Right. So if anything goes wrong, you have no one else to blame eventually,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. You have no one to blame.
It's very dire. It's very like, you know, like it's all or nothing. On
oh, 100%. Yeah. And the more I've fought since then, and it's like you have a lot of people that are with you when you're winning, and then a lot of people that aren't
yeah.
with you when you're losing, you know. But
you realize the fake ones.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. So it is really at the end of the day, 100% you, 100 that matters. That's it, you know.
Right. When that Detroit fight was that sketch a little bit. Always when someone says they fought in Detroit.
So this one was an actual official amateur boxing
shit.
Match. So it wasn't bad, but the gym wasn't a nice gym at all.
Right.
It's still around right now even, but. It wasn't a nice gym. It was kind of whatever, but it was an official amateur boxing
match.
It was sanctioned,
obviously.
Yeah, so it wasn't bad.
Right.
I didn't get into the amateur MMA scene in Michigan because that's where it
that's
is really
where,
sketchy.
Okay, so that's where it gets sketchy because
yeah.
I know, do you know a guy named Goron?
Yeah.
He told me he fought in somewhere in Michigan. So
yeah.
Bumfuck nowhere place. I have no idea.
Yeah.
And you had to literally walk in and like everyone would take out their guns, put
oh,
them
yeah.
at the counter. They would go in. There's an octagon. I don't even know what to fucking call it. It was a cage that
yeah.
looked like an octagon. And then there's like drinks around. It's like a bar with a cage in the middle.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it was hostile as fuck in there. Even after he ended up beating the guy, but after he did, they wanted to, like, a guy wanted to fight him in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I think he just retired after that. He's like, okay, I had my like,
yeah,
my one and done. I did it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down this route because this is what you have to do if you want to actually get to the top.
Yeah, yeah, no.
So this
for
wasn't
sure.
that.
Yeah. And, so after that first amateur fight, I just continued to fight. I did mainly amateur boxing at the beginning because for the age I was, that's pretty much what was mostly available as far as
in this
actual
area
fighting.
Or in general?
In general.
In general.
In general. So even when I was fighting, like ready to jump into pro MMA, prior to that, amateur MMA wasn't even super prevalent yet, you know? They got some good organizations now for amateur MMA, but at my time, it was more like the sketchier, like Michigan stuff, and I was young,
right.
too. So, anyways, I continued to compete in, like, local, like, grappling competitions, and then, like, within Ontario, and then kickboxing within Ontario. and actually all of Canada.
Because this is a good diversity, like good diversity of skill sets you're building.
Yeah, so yeah. like that's pretty much what I want to focus on. Like GSP being one of my, like, you know, people to look up to. He the biggest thing he stressed all the time was like mastering each individual martial art before coming to MMA. You know. And he was ahead of his time at the time for martial arts or MMA in general, where he brought everything to the table at once, where it was like,
it was still the era of like the guys that know one discipline sort of, or maybe two, but GSP was so well-rounded.
Exactly.
He could beat you in any way you wanted.
Really. Yeah. So if there was a way to exploit you, GSP was able to do that, you know? And that's kind of, I didn't want to leave no stone unturned when it came to that. So getting the competition experience in individual martial arts like that was dire for me, you know?
Right.
And then, so I won two world amateur kickboxing belts, one for the IKF, one for the WKA. I won IBJJF World No-Gi Championship at Blue Belt as a juvenile.
Wild.
So I was pretty successful in the amateur career, and at this point, I'm about 17, and I just did one amateur. So I'd actually scheduled my first pro fight before I did my first amateur fight, so that whole experience of my first pro fight was interesting as well. So I did one amateur MMA fight in Michigan, actually, in Port Huron.
Okay, that sounds good.
It was a pretty quick fight. I forget if it was a submission, but I got on his back and either, just finished with a TKO or it was a submission. I honestly can't remember.
American guy, by the way?
Pardon?
American guy?
Yeah, American guy, yeah.
Let's go.
And then, so there was that, and then... That March is when I made my pro debut. It was actually for a TV show called Fight Exchange.
Right.
And it was through the Super Channel, which is a Canadian network on Kojiko, I believe. And so that whole series was like me and three other Canadian fighters went to Japan for 2 weeks. And they kind of just filmed the lead up to us.
I've seen that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere online. And then... they filmed the fight itself. So I made my pro debut at 17 in Pancrase. So that's a pretty like legendary MMA organization. So
wild.
It worked out perfect. And then I wasn't able to fight in North America until I was 18. So I had maybe like 6-7 months hiatus and then made my my Canadian debut in Calgary for this organization called Hard Knocks, which I had two fights for them. And then at this point I'm 3-0. And my first loss, I guess, was in Michigan also against a guy named Vince Murdoch.
Why you lost?
It was a split decision, but it was like not even close.
Not even close.
Not even close. It was pretty blatant thing. But at the time, I'm only 18, so it's whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But it kind of hurt me a lot at the time because it's like that's the only thing about MMA where it's like, okay, no matter how hard you work or even if you beat the shit out of someone, you could still possibly lose.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't leave it on the table for the judges. Yeah,
exactly. So that's the only thing about fighting where it's like, you know, it's kind of up in the air.
But that's every sport.
It's
to some extent. Like, I mean, fucking soccer, basketball, the refs have even more probably control in the game.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if they do. I don't know. But point being, it's like...
Yeah. The only difference between judging in MMA and other sports is that one loss can change the whole trajectory of someone's career.
Right, especially early.
Yeah, where it's like one call in sports, maybe if it's a very high-level game, you know?
Yeah.
Possibly, but if it's a regular season bad call, you know, it's whatever. Make it up next week or later in that week, right?
And your salary is also big-time based on your results.
Yeah, exactly.
The other guys are getting paid just to show up.
Yeah, like one loss in MMA, I would say, probably sets you back like... 1 to 3 years, depending.
Whoa, really?
You know what I mean? As far as like, because you can't just go play games like you can in sports. You gotta schedule a fight. You gotta fight. You gotta make weight. You know, you can only do that 3 to 5 times a year. 5 being a lot. You know.
Yeah.
So and 3 even now at the higher levels, like you don't even see people fighting 3 times a year as often anymore.
Right.
Especially in the UFC, it's so. There's such a big roster now that they're booking people they're 12, 16 weeks out, you know? And they're ready to kick you out as soon as a new guy comes around. So, but yeah, at that point I'm 3-1. And then I signed with this organization called TKO, which is Canada's biggest, like historically their biggest organization. They've bred the most UFC fighters and most high level UFC guys
right
out of Canada anyway. So I fight for TKO. I win my first two. And then I lose to a guy named Alex Morgan, who just fought on Contender Series a couple, like, last week. And then I win my next one. And then I get a title shot because the way it worked out, we had a ranking system in TKO.
Right.
And Alex ended up losing. So I got to fight for the belt against Charles Jourdain, who's currently in the UFC.
Yeah, I just lost this weekend,
actually. Yeah. And he had a very close fight with Shane Burgos the fight before that, which I thought he won personally.
Right, yeah.
And that was a ranked opponent. So Jourdain's doing quite well in the UFC right now. Pretty much.
He's entertaining, by the way, well.
Yeah,
he's
extremely
a fun guy to watch.
Yeah. Like, I tune in more, not even just because I fought him before, but because they're advertising him more now as an entertaining fighter.
Yeah.
They're giving him the proper matchups to where they know it's going to be a war, you know?
Right. If you love the sport, you love watching a guy like that. He's just fun to watch.
Exactly. Yeah. He's going to put it out there. He's going to put it all on the line every time. And I think he's going to have that's pretty much what his career is going to be based around. You know, he's not going to be a title contender because he lacks a lot of skill sets that it takes to be a champion.
Right.
But as far as excitement,
entertainment, also off fight entertainment, like on Instagram, he's pure joke. So he's built a fault. Like, he's like kind of like a mini Shane O'Malley kind of.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see him at least.
Like. And his TikTok is doing quite well too.
Is it? Yeah.
He's at like 200,000 or 300,000 followers on there. So,
all right. Respect.
So
yeah, you had you were 4-1, what, 5-1, and then you got a title shot. What was it, 5-2?
I was 5-2,
yeah.
6-2, title shot, 7-2, beat Jourdain.
Nice.
And then I had a title defense against a Brazilian who also ended up beating Morgan.
By the way, sorry, in that organization, it's not about like name, hype, money. Is it more actually like results?
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of that bullshit where like you can have like a fucking guy that's like mid table get a title fight just because of the name, right?
No. So they had an actual points based system.
Point based system. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like if you win this way,
that's so much better.
Yeah. If you win this way, this is your point.
To the fighters, it's better.
Yeah. 100%.
For the fans of the sport, maybe they want like the name. I don't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It works for so long, but with a shallow roster, it doesn't work because you have the guy with the most points always, you know what I mean, far ahead of the group.
Right.
So I beat this Brazilian. He was on a 13-fight win streak. He was 25 or 26 and 6 or something like that.
That many fights under his belt?
Yes, and I was only, I want to say I was 20 at the time, and then I beat him in a 5-round fight, and I finished him in the 5th round. So that was one of my bigger wins in my career. Especially after he had already beat Morgan. So I was like,
dude, he had five times more fights than you almost.
Yeah,
that's insane.
At the time. So when I fought him, I was only 7-2, eight wins. Yeah.
Right.
Like, at least 3 times more fights.
That's
four
crazy.
Times more. So I beat him, and then I get a rematch with Morgan. I lost again. So Morgan's been kind of my kryptonite throughout my career.
Right.
And that's MMA math. That's MMA math.
Right.
You know what I mean? I beat two guys that beat him.
Right.
And I just he was.
Is it a style thing or?
I think it was a style thing. I think it was a little bit mental at the time. I was still young, you know what I mean. So I kind of weighed in on me a little bit, and it definitely was like a game plan issue. And I felt like a lot of my loss in my career, I don't really feel like the guys were better than me.
Right.
Specifically.
Well, you have to also think that way because you want to be in your own head that you can beat these guys, right?
Yeah,
100%.
Oh, I know I have the skills to beat everybody I've lost to by far. It's just for me is finding my mental game. I feel like has been a long process. You know, And that's where I feel like you see in MMA a lot of late resurgence in fighters' careers. And I don't even know if you can consider mine a late resurgence because I'm only 24.
Yeah, like we're talking about you're 24.
So I don't think my career is even close to being over. It's just a matter of, you know what I mean? I'm kind of my own worst enemy when it comes to a lot of these things. So
I mean, look at Stipe.
Yeah.
Like, look how late Stipe found his like run.
Yeah.
He was like in his mid-30s almost.
And at the beginning, it's like
he was like average at the beginning. He was like getting like
he lost to Stefan Struve.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, nobody's going to think a guy like that's ever going to be a dominant champion.
Right. It's a crazy sport. Like the math doesn't add up.
Charles Oliveira's had like a 500 UFC record at the beginning. But that's what happens when you get into the UFC at 20 years old. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some.
They call the guy like he's an early quitter or like he kind of like he lost a little bit of the will in some of the longer fights.
Yeah.
Now he's literally looks like a demon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You drop that guy, you should count your blessings that, you know what I mean? Because that guy's going to come back and try to kill you. But that's what I mean. Everybody has their different stretch of the career. Max Holloway was like that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He lost his first UFC fight and then he had about, I think he was 3-3 in the UFC at one point.
Yeah.
and you wouldn't have ever thought he'd be like one of the most dominant champions in history.
It's so hard to predict these things, yeah. And you never know which guy's going to find that spark to really take him to the next level.
And that's all it takes, too. And that, do I think these guys just suddenly got more skillful? No.
They grinded.
I think it was more of a mental
switch. Mental, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And there's a book I'm reading right now called Mind Gym, and it's the same thing. It's like, how does a pitcher go from having a great game or having a terrible game to having maybe a no-hitter or something like that?
Right.
You know what I mean? He didn't get better in a week.
Sure.
He didn't get better in 2 weeks. He didn't even get better in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It happens in tennis all the time, too. You're right. I see it all the time.
That's why, honestly, I love tennis. I don't know if you've ever watched the Untold series on thing, but the one about the tennis player, Marty something, I want to say his name is.
Martoglu, coach?
No, he's a
white dude. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I didn't see that one, but I know which one you're talking about. He was like friends with Roddick or some shit.
He's
an American guy.
They were like brothers almost. Like that guy's family pretty much adopted this guy.
Okay. I didn't see that one. I want to see it though. It looks good.
It is one of the best like mental game documentaries I've ever watched in my life. So see, that guy basically one day decided, he's like, you know what? I feel like turning my career around. Right. So he turned his career around. His goal at first was, he was drinking and stuff, quit alcohol altogether. Yeah. You know what I mean? And even if that's not so much a physical advantage as it is a mental advantage,
huge.
When you discipline yourself like that, like, I don't think people who wake up early are necessarily better off, like, physically or, you know what I mean, than somebody who wakes up late. I think it's just a discipline factor of, you know what I mean? You're building self-confidence in that. You're accomplishing something for yourself.
Sure.
And that translates to everything else you do in sport or life in general, right?
100%.
That documentary is crazy. He just decided one day he was going to turn it all around, and he did. He became a top five player in the world. I think he beat, he either beat Federer or Nadal at one point. He beat
that alone is insanity in the sport. That's like beating Silva or like,
that's
fucking crazy.
That's what I mean. So that's all it takes is one little mental switch one day, and a guy could go from being, he was only like maybe top 50 at best at one point.
Right.
And now he's top 10, top five, you know?
You know what I thought you were going to bring up? There's another tennis documentary, which I think you might find interesting. It's about like a coach's playbook or something like that. And it has a guy, his name is Patrick Mortoglou, who was Serena Williams' coach.
Okay.
And essentially, Serena was at Wimbledon struggling, you know, struggling at the net, like net points.
Yeah.
She was not really good at it. She was like losing like 70% of them, which is super uncharacteristic for a high-level like tennis player.
Yeah.
Those are like some of the easiest points.
Mm-hmm.
So what he ended up doing one day is, like, she was still in the tournament. She was like kind of like, you know, looked like she could lose any match. But he was like, listen, I actually just pulled up the stats, and every time you come to the net, you win 80% of the time. Like, you win the point.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, really? I thought I was losing them.
Yeah.
And he lied to her. He's like, no, you're actually winning them.
Yeah.
So next game, she goes out. She adapts, like, the mindset that she's actually, like, a winner at the net.
Yeah.
And then she actually lives up to that stat with 80% at the net. I was like, what the?
That's all it takes, man.
That's all it takes.
It's a mental switch, man. And honestly, I like tennis, too, because that's another individual sport at the end of the day. It's different from team sports altogether. You know what I mean? Like, tennis...
Fine margins as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The difference between winning and losing is that big, you know? And the difference between being good and great, that big.
Yeah, 100%.
You know? Small. I respect tennis players a lot as far as that aspect, and it's very interesting to listen to their careers and how it plays out and stuff like that. So,
You were 7-1. You got the title, right? Where were we at?
Yeah, so I lost to Morgan again, and then I lost the belt. And
then
Jourdain beat him for the belt after that. So I didn't fight for TKO again after that. I ended up fighting for an organization called PFC, a local Ontario promotion.
Right.
And then I went 3-0 in that organization.
By the way, why did you do that? Why did you stop for...
So TKO was already on the downswing.
All the way out.
So TKO always... I'm sure TKO will come back at some point. Like... They bred GSP, Sam Stout, Mark Hominick, Chris Ordecki, like a lot of great guys. Dave Loazzo, like multiple people that
have
either won UFC belts or fought for UFC belts, right?
That's
so
crazy,
TKO was definitely by far the biggest. They paid pretty well considering it was a regional show. And as far as it was the only Canadian promotion on UFC Fight Pass at the time, so it was a lot of exposure.
That's huge, huge.
And just very professional all around, you know what I mean? Production value, everything.
Right. There was a fight where Kyle had it here in the Ice Park. Was that a TKO production?
That was BTC.
That was BTC.
So TKO was only Montreal based.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
And then, so I fight for PFC. I go 3-0 with them against some decent opponents. And then COVID kind of hit. So I fought the December before COVID happened in that March. So when COVID happened, basically after I already had gone 3-0, I was, I think, 11-3 at the time. So
at 22?
Just turned 22.
Just 20, wow. Yeah. That's
really so, just turned 22. So we were pretty much expecting a UFC call prior to the whole COVID situation.
Is that how it usually works? Like you have a good streak in your region and then like, what?
Yeah.
Uncle Dana gets a fucking, it's like a back call.
Yeah. Pretty.
He's like,
so.
TJ? Yeah. I'll be in Ontario. And like.
There was a UFC card Kyle actually fought for in Vancouver.
Yes.
And
to GSP's former, like he was the coach, same coach as GSP.
He fought Nordin in,
that was a different card.
Ottawa,
okay.
And then he fought someone else in Vancouver. But when they came to the Vancouver area, they had reached out and basically told me to be ready for short notice, potentially, you know what I mean? Because that's what they look for.
As a filler? Like a fill-in?
Oh, just in case someone gets hurt, right? So so we're already on the radar. We know that, right? At that point. And that was actually before my last PFC fight, I believe. So I was probably only 10-3 or something like that.
Okay, but you were waiting for that call. Yeah. And
so
you're always maintaining weight, all that stuff? Or,
yeah. So before that, prior to that, even winning that last PFC fight, I kind of knew I was in that zone, you know, ready to get the call. And I'd already fought experienced guys, everything, you know, so everything kind of checked out. I never really had a padded record. I never really fought bumps, you know. I'd always search for the best matchups. Even fighting Morgan a second time was more my doing than him calling for a rematch, right? So,
okay.
So COVID hits in March, and then kind of everything's like, oh, don't really know what's going to happen now. You know? I don't know what's going on, but UFC continued to be the only sport really happening at the time.
Fucking shout out to Uncle Dana for that one. That was special.
Really, and that's where the sport grew more than it ever
has.
Yeah,
it did, yeah.
Especially when it comes to sports gambling and stuff like that. You know what I mean? He's taking advantage of a market where it's like, you know, you got people that love to gamble and there's nothing else to gamble on but fights.
right. I didn't think about that at all. Yeah,
so that was huge for the organization. And so at that point, I was just running and working with my boxing coach, Kara, one of my boxing coaches, Kara, just at her house because gyms weren't open, right? Yeah, nothing was open.
Welcome
so I was
Canada,
in,
by the way, fucking. Let's not go down that fucking route. Me and you have been pissed about Canada and COVID for like.
Hopefully, they don't mandate the boosters. It seems like
it's
they
coming.
Might.
For fucking this place. Anyways,
So I get the call to go to Contender Series, actually. That's UFC pretty much, right?
What season is this, by the way? This is they've been doing this for quite a bit now.
I want to say season four.
Four, yeah.
like week two, season four, something like that. And so I get the call, I want to say, in June. And then I'd already had like a trip planned for Vancouver at the time, all that, just because Vancouver was the only place like opened up or whatever at that
semi-opened or whatever open meant at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd already had a vacation plan, and then I ended up going to Vancouver and just training pretty much the whole time I was there. Still kind of enjoying myself doing stuff, but so did all that, got some great training in while I was in Vancouver, and then come back from Vancouver, and they're like, well, can you come out to Vegas for the... Because I'd already planned to do my training camp in Vegas when I got back because I can't train in
anywhere
Canada.
Else.
Exactly. I'd gotten back and they asked me to go early for like a to do the production parts of the interview, pre-interview, all
right,
that
right,
stuff.
Right.
So basically I got back from Vancouver. I was like in Vancouver for like 10, 11 days and then get back. I got back right on Canada Day. I had 2 days in Windsor and then just flew right out Vegas. And did my whole training camp there. My coach Kara actually came for the whole camp for that time. And had a great camp. It all worked out. And then had my Contender Series fight, won.
I forgot how Contender Series was. Is there any of that like house stuff with Contender Series?
No.
Or is it just like they call up a bunch of guys?
Yeah.
It's like a Mortal Kombat fucking tournament.
Yeah.
The winners potentially have a shot at
it. It's not even a tournament. It's just you go
fight
and fight one guy, and it's like a tryout for the UFC, essentially.
I gotcha.
And it was a really weird experience because it was the first time I'd fought without a crowd because despite UFC being run still, there was still no audience allowed.
There was an audience in that Detroit place when you were boxing?
Yeah, there's even in the smallest show I've ever fought in, there's been some drunk guy yelling in the stands at some point, right? So fighting in Contender Series, it was like you could hear a pin drop in the arena, right?
That's spooky.
It's so weird, weird. And it's a little different vibe too because they don't run it like a professional show. They basically call you into the ring. They don't announce your name. Hey, you're up. Okay, you're up. Everybody goes into the ring. Ref just looks. You ready? You're ready. It's like
that's
almost
so
like a,
spooky. There's no like walkout. Was there no walkout? No.
There's no like official walkout. No entry music. No nothing.
That's so odd.
Contender Series, they really make it like almost like a sparring session, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like a sparring session for the fight of your life, basically. So
that's crazy.
It's a different vibe because the energy's not there and stuff. Right. So. Super weird, but so I end up getting the win there and get a contract.
That day, after that the fight,
right after the fight,
came up to you, said, "Here's the
you're in basically."
Wild. Sweet.
So 22 years old, I'm in the UFC now, and then
how'd that feel? Like that's like, I mean, that's a lifetime dream almost happening at 22. Is that spooky or a little bit?
Honestly, and like I'll get into that soon, but it was like super overwhelming. Following that, you know what I mean? Because as far as like
it's a lot, right?
Yeah, like I had a lot of hype coming off the Contender Series because I have a pretty like extensive background as far as not even just fighting, just like life story in general, you know?
Right.
And so they advertised that a lot during the pre-fight and everything. So
right
after the fight, it was like, oh, boom! You just doubled your follower count on all your social media, pretty much. So.
But it was also like the attention now to like your personal life, and like this, and that was kind of new, right? Because these other organizations don't give a fuck. Like,
no, they don't give a shit. No,
the limelight. Yeah.
So the UFC really started hyping me up, and then so I go to see my girlfriend at the time in Winnipeg, and it was cool because it was the first time I'd been noticed like outside my own city. So,
yeah,
like, someone I was in the mall in Winnipeg, and someone asked me for a picture.
Damn, so, UFC's so fucking big.
Yeah,
eh?
It's crazy, and. Got all that, and then I got a call when I was in Winnipeg, like, oh, do you want to fight Derek Minner? And it was, like, only a four-week notice or something like that. So I was like, really good fight. I could still make weight. I've been maintaining my weight pretty good. So I was like, yeah, for sure, let's do that. A really good fight for me. and then, so right from Winnipeg, fly back to Vegas to do training. So haven't been home at this point, like, almost 3 months.
Wild,
yeah. Do my training camp in Vegas, and then at some point, I would say it's probably 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks out of the fight, I get like a grade 2 strain in my LCL, like grappling, so my knee was just fucking blown out pretty much. And at the time, it was like, should I pull out? And then I was like, this is a really good matchup for me. I don't want to miss this opportunity because if I pull out of this one, maybe they'll give me tough fight, you know?
Yeah, you won't have a choice in the next one. It could be worse.
But that's my mistake as a fighter, and I'd never really been someone that pulls out of fights as far as, like, the past of my career.
Sure.
So I went through with it, made weight. Pretty much the rest of the camp was just focused on making weight, you know? It's tough when I couldn't run, couldn't really move around. I was pretty much just shadow boxing in the garage at my buddy Cody's house in Vegas and just doing, like, light mid-work because I couldn't really use my leg too much. So, anyways,
Were you prepared to use it in the like if you had to in the fight though?
I mean, by the time I actually got to the fight, my knee wasn't really a factor.
Oh, okay,
at
okay.
All. So I don't want it to be
but
like
the training was like obvious.
The training was terrible, right?
Right.
And not only that is like I'm a guy who kind of like gains confidence from hard work too.
Sure.
So it was like, as far as going into the fight, it was almost like I was just trying to make it to the fight. I wasn't even focused on the result at that point.
Right.
So I go out there and I lose pretty quickly, like within a minute.
Yeah.
I just get choked out. And
by the way, a fight you're gonna win 9 out of 10 times, in my opinion.
Literally.
Like I watched that, I'm like, there's no way this guy.
Honestly, if I'm being completely honest, I pretty much quit, like mentally quit.
Really?
Like it's not like there's the submission I could have got out of. You know what I mean? It was just this is my way out of the fight. Okay, let's tap. You know?
Right. I got
That's pretty much it. And it just after that, you know what I mean? You go from being like this guy, first Canadian to ever win a contract on Contender Series.
Yeah.
22 years old, you know, all this hype around you, and then everybody's just shitting on you after that. You
right.
know what I mean? And it's like, ooh, you know, this is fucked up.
Now you see the other side of that, like getting that little bit of like clout, whatever, following.
Yeah.
You see the darker side of like these assholes that are fucking keyboard
and
warriors.
And that's what I mean. It is like, it is literally all guys that are, you know, mostly hiding behind fake accounts.
I mean, it's the potato
like
chip meme. Yeah. It's like the guy with the fucking potato chip.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to fucking dodge that head kick and fucking spun him. Like, come on, yeah. bro. Like, the yeah. fuck.
Exactly.
Get out of here.
Exactly. Or the guy that sees a guy miss weight and they're like, yeah, fuck yeah. you. He couldn't make weight. Like, okay.
What
buddy.
A pussy. Can't make weight. Like, yeah. As he's 300 pounds over
didn't
fucking
even,
weight.
Yeah, it's like they think the guy didn't even try to make weight or something. It's a joke.
Fucking idiots.
But, yeah, so... Mentally, I went through a very rough spot as far as all of that goes.
Right.
Like, I was like, damn, this is... I wanted to get to the UFC bad, and this is what it is. This is fucking sucks. You know what I mean?
Right.
This ain't what I want to do. You know what I mean? This is terrible, right? So...
You saw the best part of it and the worst part of it in such a short time span.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's crazy, yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, you know... Like, when you watch it and when you dream about it, you don't think of how bad it could be, you know what I mean?
Right, you always
and
think of the positive side of it.
Yeah, exactly, because you don't ever think you're going to lose or you don't think these people are ever going to hate you or whatever.
Sure.
Or some of the shit messages you get. And it's like, you just don't expect it. And you'd be surprised at how deep
these
fuckers
cuts
go.
Yeah.
Like, they'll talk about your family, they'll talk about all this shit. And it's like, dude, what the fuck? All I did was lose a fight.
Dude,
what's
I had a guy
to do
blame me about, like, wars in Albania that, like, I'm like, bro, I don't even know what you're talking about.
I wasn't even
about.
Born. You
I have
know
to
what
Wikipedia
mean?
What he was talking about. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
my guy?
Like, that's what I mean. Like, these guys don't, yeah. like, they don't think. They just, like,
right.
say whatever's on
can.
Their mind. Yeah, and yeah, they, exactly, yeah. they can. And, but yeah, mentally went through a rough spot there. I, had to pull out of my next two scheduled bouts due to injury.
Right.
Like, legit injuries. And I was actually supposed to fight at MSG for one of them, which would have been
Damn.
Amazing. You know what
yeah.
I mean? But, yeah.
What card? What card was this?
Covington versus Usman 2.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
that's
so it would have been crazy.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, pulled out of my next two to injury. And then this is, like, over almost a year and a half to 2 year span. So I hadn't fought between my first UFC fight and my last UFC fight. It was like 2 years almost.
Wild, yeah.
So go through like a big mental lapse in that first year after my first fight too. And that's another thing too, is like when I got injured the second times, that was the only thing, like if I'm going to take benefit from a loss, it's going to be, okay, next time you're hurt, actually pull out, you know what I mean?
Right. You don't make that mistake.
Yeah. Don't yeah. even, I never want to go into a fight being like, I wasn't 100% or I wasn't even close to my 100%.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Do you do you believe in that stuff that like, they always say like almost no fighter is 100% going into a fight?
Oh
now.
Yeah. I believe that 100%. I believe that for sure. Like nobody is 100% healthy,
but they're not like 50 or some shit.
Yeah.
yeah.
And like, for me, it's not, am I physically 100% healthy? Is it, am I mentally 100%
right,
healthy? Right.
Yeah.
And you could be not have the amazing training camp, but still be healthy, you know?
Right.
I mean?
Right.
And, so there was that. And then also now I have the, like, almost like a, in the back of my head, I have a fear of like being judged as far as like after that first loss, I've experienced shit I've never experienced
right.
before. It's as far as like you have so much spotlight on you, even being this is not even like a high level UFC fight, you know, this
right.
is like undercard fight,
right.
fighting a guy who's not ranked. And I got all these
right. What happens when you
cetera.
Get to the like the main event or
yeah.
what main card? Right.
But eventually you have to block it out. No, nobody matters. And you got to do it because you love to do it, you
right.
know, you can't do it. It has nothing to do with the spotlight, but I got, you know what I mean? Pumped up with the spotlight right away.
Right.
And it does feel good. I can't lie, but it wasn't about fighting then. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You're going away from the sport at this point.
Yeah,
I'm just
yeah,
thinking
of course.
About fame, fucking
right.
whatever.
And you're also in your early 20s.
Yeah.
You're
it
basically
feels good.
Retarded. Like,
yeah, straight
my
up.
Language. I'm canceled. It's over, but whatever. It's true. Like I was basically retarded when I was 20.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You actually give a shit about what fucking most of these idiots are saying.
Yeah.
You're like, damn, maybe,
it's true.
You're like, maybe he's right. And then later on, you're like, that fucking guy
yeah, like,
know
who the
shit.
Fuck is that guy? Who the
yeah,
fuck?
Exactly. So it's just all in your own head.
Right.
So anyways, have a little bit of a hiatus. I was the same guy I was scheduled for at MSG, I was scheduled for again, but he ended up pulling out. So now I fight this guy named Pat Sabatini, who's close to being ranked in the featherweight rankings, probably, I'd say, if he wins his next fight, which I think he will. I think he's fighting either next week or the week after.
Yeah.
He'll most likely be top 15. And I lose that fight in a decision. I put up a pretty good fight, but again, you know what I mean? felt like a guy I could beat for sure. Just a little bit behind on everything there as far as like wasn't reacting well, stuff like that.
Did you lose, what, 2-1 rounds or was it doing all three? What was the,
The judges' scorecard, it was
3-0. Oh. Yeah.
A lot of people thought I won the first round, but it is what it is.
It's almost irrelevant, right?
Yeah, yeah, it makes no difference. But considering where he was in the UFC, where I was in the UFC, I was 0-1, he was 3-0.
Right.
So it's like I took a big step up in competition because it was like his opponent had pulled out. A guy I trained with, actually, Gavin Tucker, my opponent pulled out, so they just naturally matched us up.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't really about where we were. It was just convenient.
Yeah.
You know, as far as scheduling.
That's the problem with UFC. Some of these matchups are always like,
yeah.
You wonder what the logic behind them is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's like if the UFC wants to build a guy up, they'll build a guy up. And honestly, I felt like with Derek Minna fight, they were giving me that opportunity to build me up because I feel like I landslide Derek Minner pretty much, like you said, 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's pretty much up to my last fight now. And I'm a free agent at the moment, 24. So I'm looking to fight hopefully November and December, if not just for sure in December. But I would like to finish the year off strong, you know what I mean?
Here in Ontario? Or?
One would be Ontario. If I fight in November, it'd be Ontario. If I fight in December, it'll be Alberta.
Right, yeah.
But I've been staying very active with the high-level grappling, stuff like that.
Yeah, so. I've noticed. You've been doing little tournaments and stuff.
Yeah, so I think a big thing is just finding a love for competing again.
Right.
Just like I was when I first started, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I like to be able to have something to look forward to and train for, whether that's grappling, boxing. Like, I'm open to professional boxing fights, you know what I mean? I would love to do some point. Because... Really, I just enjoy competing in combat sports. It's pretty much it. You know, that's what made the sport fun for me, and it always gives me opportunity to progress and learn more.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I lose in a grappling match, it doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
I want to be
a great MMA fighter, you know? So if I can compete against some of these best grappling guys, that's going to translate over
that's
to
huge
MMA
on,
very
a
well.
Huge, like, feather on your cap, right?
Yeah.
Because this is not the only thing you're doing. And if you're beating dudes that are literally only doing that, or most of them they're only doing that, that's enormous.
Like, 100%. Yeah. And it's like, it just gives me confidence as far as competition, just always getting the competitive juices flowing, and you're just, like, having a 2-year, that was the longest hiatus I had between competition was, like, almost 2 years.
Right.
Ever in my whole life competing, ever. So, yeah, it was just good to start competing again. Honestly, it's like being cut from the UFC was like almost a relief for me.
Yeah.
As far as like, okay, now I get to sit back and really work on what I want to work on without the pressure of maybe your next fight you're losing your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't lose my job. I'm a fighter at the end of the day. Yeah. I can fight wherever I want.
Right. Did you hear about like what Usman said about his loss?
No.
He's basically saying like it was a massive like weight off my shoulders. Like
he's
basically looking at it as like, dude, like, you know, you guys don't know how much this was like on me to, because apparently he was one fight away from beating Silva's
or tying Silva,
I don't know what it was
for title win.
And there was all these other like statistics that people were telling him that he was chasing, and he's like, honestly, once I lost that fight, like the weight of the world just went off his shoulders, and now it looked to me, at least when I watched the Rogan interview, it looks like he's just mentally like so much more relaxed and ready to go at it again. Do you feel like you're kind of at that level as well yourself?
Like, yeah, 100%. So like I said, like it when you are caught up in so much other shit other than the fights themselves, you know what I mean? You start like, what, you're worrying about the record? How about you worry about winning the fight?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Worry about your opponent. Yeah. Worry about what you're going to do.
It's almost like he probably became like, Now I'm worried about being perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not going to be perfect in any fight.
He still won that fight, by the way, for 24 of the 25 minutes, which is outrageous.
Like, he lost the first round. He won the next three very dominantly.
Yeah.
On his way to win the title, gets caught. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's what happens. You're fighting the best in the world.
Right.
It's going to happen. That's what I mean. Like, when people are like, oh, I see people talking shit about Usman, whatever. I'm like, man, he's most likely going to come back and win the belt.
Yeah, crazy.
Like,
how are you talking about shit with that guy?
Yeah.
He's a freak of nature. Like,
aside from Kobe Covington, nobody's even come close to having close fights with him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, the Leon fight wasn't close. He got caught. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was dominating the fight. Like, as far as Usman and Kobe, that's the only fight where it was like, okay, maybe one round here, one round here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the only guy in the whole division, aside from Khamzat, but I'm not 100% sold on him yet.
Yeah, we'll still got some work to do.
Yeah, more to do, 100%, right? And
but it should be like a really eye-opening thing when you see a guy like that who's fucking so dominant for so long, still get that kind of level of hatred and stupidity.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, you think, like, oh, wait, I'm getting, like, whatever, I lost my undercard fight, this haters. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter where you're at. That's going to fucking follow you 100%. Forever. So it's like, it might as well let it happen now, let it adapt to it, and then once you get to that level, you're good.
Yeah.
Nothing can touch you.
Yeah. Like, mentally, you have to understand, like, these people don't understand. Just to get to the UFC, you have to be a great athlete.
It's insanity how hard it is to do.
It's not like people just watch the UFC, so they don't understand what it takes to even get there, right? Yeah. So they're like, oh, you just lost a UFC fight. You suck. You know what I mean? Oh, okay. I'm still not even just the top 0.1% of human beings. I'm the 0.1% of MMA fighters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you gotta
just
to make it to the UFC. And it's like,
it's a ludicrous statement.
And of course, I'm not satisfied with how my UFC run went at all, but I'm 24 and I have time to build. And now I have even more time to really create what I want to, as far as like the right fights to properly build my career up. You know what I mean? Like, I want to a whole rebuild process to get there. If I get back into the UFC at 27, that's still young.
The like average age most people get in at.
Yeah.
Like, most people, even in the some of the higher divisions, it's a little bit older, but in the lower divisions, like, that's kind of where you're really hitting your prime. Like, you're starting to kind of work your way into the UFC.
Exactly. Yeah. Like if you look at the average age of a UFC champion now, it's between 32 and 37.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. What, Usman's 37 and he's probably going to come back and win his
belt. Win it again. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like,
Stipe might come back and, we don't know, but he has a possibility to be a champion at 41.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
And Glover won it at 42.
Glover, great example.
Take the John Jones equation out, but even John Jones is in his mid-30s now.
Right.
Like, people, like, every great champion's in their 30s. I think the last young champion was Brandon Moreno. I think he just turned 30 or something like that.
Right.
But
and that's young. It's funny. Like, the 30s young.
Yeah.
I got time. I'm good.
That's what I mean. Like everybody's career is different, and some of these guys, like Oliveira, you have like 20 UFC fights almost before you even come to the title contention, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's different. Everybody's on their own path. But the MMA the society of MMA, it's interesting. You know what I mean? I don't even think the best fighters are in the UFC, if you ask me. You know what I mean? Demetrius Johnson. I think the 125 GOAT.
Yeah.
I think he still goes out there and beats the...
Right.
Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo are the only two people at 125 that matter at this point.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is ridiculous because they're about to fight for a fourth time.
Wasn't Pereira? I mean, Pereira only joined the UFC like, what, a couple years? 2 years ago?
But he had an extensive kickboxing career.
Yeah.
And they set him up with the right fights in the UFC because they really wanted to build off that, oh, well, he beat Israel. He beat the champ twice.
Right, let's get him in right off the bat.
Yeah, so it's like the UFC builds up who they want to build up.
Right.
You look at Sean O'Malley. Like, how many times are you going to fight before you fight a guy who's ranked?
That's the wildest one.
He fought Cheeto, got wrecked by Cheeto.
Yeah.
He fought Pedro. I felt like he lost the first round. The second round was going okay for him, but then the eye poke.
Do you think it's
going
to end well or end bad for him against Jan?
Yeah, I think Peter Jan's just like...
A monster. That guy scares the fuck out of him. He's like 5'1".
Yeah.
But he's the scariest man on the planet.
And Peter Jan's like... His fight with Jose Aldo was just insane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He gets his shit kicked out of him for the first two rounds, comes back and stops him, you know?
Monster.
And that's what I mean. Yeah, Peter Jan's going to probably decimate O'Malley because... Jan, as we've seen, his only weaknesses would be in his grappling, and O'Malley's grappling
caliber
is not gonna be
there. For the past like 3 years, and like it's just gonna, it's gonna be like night and day. I feel like, but who knows?
Yeah, you look at the just the resumes alone of who they've fought. You know, Jan has 5-round experience. You can't beat that. You know,
multiple championship fights.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
to the 5th round as well.
Yeah. Fucking animal, man. I don't know. I love the story. I'm happy we did this. I don't know. Are we at an hour? Yeah, we did an hour. 30 minutes, yeah. Anything else you want to talk about? Plug you're working on. You got you came here ready to do some construction.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys need concrete work, hit me up. You need a haircut. Hit me up.
All right, dude. I got one haircut. One time, my barber was out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, thanks for not telling him that.
Yeah. It's all good, bro. Barber.
You cheat on your girlfriend? You don't fuck. No, I'm just kidding.
No, exactly, bro.
I'm trolling.
You don't snitch on the homies. You cheat on your girl. You know what I'm saying?
by the way, that video. When was that fucking video? Can I ask you about that? Or I don't know if that's something to talk about.
That was probably 2018.
For people that don't know, this viral video. can I ask, not to be an asshole?
Yeah, ask what you want.
What fucking happened? Like, you.
Uh, I mean, there's two sides to every story, I'm sure, but...
I want your side. I don't give a fuck about her. Yeah, like...
I don't know. It was just a shitty relationship, and it didn't end very well either.
But that was, like, your first taste of, like, the big internet crowd, eh? Like, when you posted a fucking...
Yeah, so when I posted that video, honestly, if you just type in my name, it'll be one of the suggested searches.
That's so,
so
fucking
Google.
Funny, kind of. Like, it's kind of funny. Like...
Luckily now it's pretty much it's at the bottom of the list, but at the beginning it was at the top.
You need a few more like highlight knockouts.
Yeah.
Before like
we gets really, washed away.
Yeah, it gets washed.
But so when I first posted on Twitter, me and my buddy were watching, we're like, damn, it's at 20,000 views. And then like 5 minutes later, I'm like, damn, it's at 40,000 views. And then it got huge because Chad Ochocinco retweeted it.
He
quoted the tweet. No way. And then after that, it was just like, boom, boom, boom. I was like, within the end of the day, it was at 2 million views. I'm like,
holy
dude. I'm
fuck.
Like, dude, what the fuck? And then the next day, it's at like 4 million. And that's where it capped out pretty much, right around 4 million. And I was like, damn, that's crazy.
This is wild.
I mean? Yeah, like on Twitter in that one day, I gained like 10,000 followers. It was nuts. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Who's got the fucking last laugh? Let's go.
Yeah,
let's
literally. Hey, but I felt like I've been successful since then. And you know what? I hope she's doing good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's fucking, that's a great way to fucking end it. You seem like a sweetheart. No, bro, thank you so much for your time. We've been trying to set this up for a while now. I'm happy you finally did it. If it ever happens again, we'll run it back.
Yeah, for sure.
But
man,
I'll leave all
your... We can get more political next time, too.
Oh, my God. I was like, do we do this? Because me and you have had some fucking chats about, like, the COVID restrictions, the vaccine bullshit. Like, as we've lived in this place, it's gotten progressively more and more ludicrous.
It's weird, man.
It's actually gotten, like, to a parody level of ludicrous.
Dude, like, there's still, like, Western universities, not only their booster mandate... Their mask mandate.
Oh, are they really?
They're mandating a booster and a mask to come back to campus. And then you got Fanshawe 5 minutes down the road that has neither. So it's like, hey, are you
in the same fucking like district?
Literally, almost the same street. Like,
guys, it's over. You took an L. It wasn't that effective. Clearly, we're talking about it. It's like, what are we doing?
Dude,
like,
we're wasting money.
We're wasting so much time and money. We wasted so much time and money on all this shit. And I think that's what it mostly comes down to. Like, we don't want to fucking... We can't just admit, hey, we were wrong about a lot of things. My bad. Let's move on. It's like, the guys in the top positions can't do that. Yeah. If me and you had, like, a conflict, whatever, and I fucked up, I'd be like, hey, bro, I fucked up. My bad. You know, it is
a
what
lot
it
of
is.
A lot of the top positions are resigning or stepping down.
Yeah.
If you notice, you know
or
what
they're
I mean?
Fouching, they're like, fucking dying slowly.
Yeah.
They just don't want to.
and it's just like, it's just, I don't know, it's the whole society now just like, oh, we got to be the good people. You know
yes.
What, I mean? What is a good person?
Let me make sure that everyone knows I'm morally in the right here.
Yeah.
Like, and like, I'm always with whatever everyone else
dude,
is thinking.
I don't really give a shit. Make your money, mind your business. It's whatever, right? You don't got to fucking tell me
right.
What's right and wrong and what is right or wrong to me. Maybe it's not right or wrong to me. Maybe I think you're an asshole. You know what I mean?
100%.
And that's cool. I should be allowed to say that to whoever the fuck I want.
100%.
But, and they should be allowed to say it to me. You know what I mean? If somebody's a bad person, I want to know they're a bad person. I don't want them to be suppressed to the point where it's like...
Well, we're talking about like submit, like kind of, let's say, destroying free speech. Why don't we help you out by removing some of those assholes that are in your DMs?
Yeah.
Like, no one's talking about that. Like,
straight up. Like,
yeah.
On Twitter, I could go on. I deleted my Twitter because that place is just cancer.
Yeah, me too.
That place is just cancer. It's terrible.
It's really the worst.
And it's just like, you can find a video of some Mexican cartel chopping a guy's fucking limbs off. But
yeah, you can.
But you call someone a fat pig or something like that.
Yeah,
shit gets,
everyone get him.
Your shit gets banned. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? Literally. Dude, I couldn't advertise on my business account on Facebook because... I called some Karen in a comment section a fat pig. I swear to God. I seen what they banned me for. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. So they restricted my advertising rights off all my pages.
Are you serious?
So I tried to pay the money. I'm trying to pay Facebook money. Pay to advertise. Yeah. They're like, oh, I got like 17 more days left or something like that where I can't do it.
I didn't know it was that bad.
I'm on timeout, man. I don't know. It's some bullshit, but.
It's so true though, bro. I remember watching like a fucking sniper shootout somewhere in Mexico where like the cartel was taking over the city and it was like a fucking virus slowly taking over the city and the cops like had to surrender. And then on the next trend, it's like some fucking Jordan Peterson thing. Like it calls a dude a chick or something. I don't know what the fuck
and
it was.
And more people care about that.
Jordan Peterson canceled. He's the fucking, like, the worst fucking male on the planet. His, like, his whole degree is bullshit. His doctor is bullshit. Like, I just watched a fucking Mexican sniper shootout in the other fucking video.
Dude, I watched someone's brains get blown out. Like, what the fuck?
That's, like, that counts fine. It's journalism. It's like, fuck off, bro.
Like, and it's really detrimental to people who are creators.
Yeah.
Who, especially in, like, I don't even know if you'll end up putting this stuff in the video, but
I'm putting everything in here, yeah, brother. I don't care. Cancel me.
And
give a fuck.
That's what I mean. Like, you got, well, the biggest one lately is Andrew Tate. That's huge. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, maybe you don't, just because you don't agree with somebody doesn't mean they should be wiped off the face of the planet. Of course. You know what I mean?
Take away his, it's like, we're defending free speech. Like, we're still letting him talk, but, like, you're removing his way to make money.
Yeah.
Which means you're killing him, essentially, in today's world.
Like, yeah, a lot of his accounts have been frozen due to this. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're lucky.
Nonsense.
Yeah, if you do this to maybe a smaller creator or something like that, maybe you just killed their whole income.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's whatever, but it's just crazy to think. It is worrying because it's just crazy to think, like, oh, all it takes is for a few people and the actual minority, in my opinion, the actual minority to not like what you have to say and you're gone, you know?
Well, think about what that minority actually is. When you first look at, like, let's say a video with 10,000 views, you'll get 100 comments.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, those 100 comments are the fucking smallest percentage of people.
Yeah.
Now, you take those 100 comments and you take, like, 10 assholes
that
are, you know, cancel culture, whatever, you're looking at like 10 people per 10,000.
Yeah.
And this is the group that gets pushed to everyone's fucking feed. Everyone's like, oh my God. And then, like, it just grows into this massive. So basically what you have is 10 assholes. And then the algorithm is like, well, there's 10 assholes. Let's get more. Let's find some more in there. Yeah. And then they all just pile on.
Yeah.
Like
100%. And it's like, it doesn't help that it's all this shit's backed by most governments too, where it's like, oh, okay. Like you said, like we were saying, like the good people.
The good. You know what's funny? That video I made about, like, we should AK-47 people that don't get vaccinated. I made a parody video basically saying, like, we're not doing enough. We need to start executing unvaccinated people. It was obviously a parody.
But people will legitimately agree with this, which is a shame. You know what
That's
I mean?
Where it's gotten, though, where, like, the parody is when parody becomes, like, reality. Indistinguishable between reality. It's like, we're living in some weird, like, dystopian future.
Dude, yeah. It's like, if you don't agree with me, just, you should be dead.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Excuse me?
Kill them. Ban them. Demonetize them. Like, wait. Aren't you the guys that talk about, like, free speech? Aren't, like, this is the whole point of this.
What,
like,
is liberal?
Exactly. What is, that's exactly what it should
what
be,
What is
right?
liberal, right?
We said we were going to do it. We fucking did it. All right, whatever. It's fine. We did an hour, bro. Thanks for your time. Yeah, no Love problem. Having you Thank on. You. You're welcome back whenever you want. Like I said, I'll leave all your shit in the bio.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Beautiful. Appreciate it.